This is a production of Cornell University.
I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting in order at 4:33. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from last week?
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
At the very bottom of the first page, it says M. Lukasiewicz informed the members that the UA now has a head representative on the policy advisory group. Is that correct?
It's just a representative.
Okay.
It's a UA rep.
Yeah.
Right. But you're not the head of anything.
No,
I'm
sorry.
I'm the UA rep, meaning I'm the only UA rep.
So we can strike head.
Strike head, yeah. And then also on the last page, when we were discussing the resolution, the last bullet point where it says, and Lukasiewicz passed the motion to approve the resolution, it would have been moved if I moved. I don't recall moving. To pass it, I think someone else did, but it's not passed.
You could say something like, you asked if there was opposition to moving to a vote, seeing none, we moved to a vote. It was passed unanimously.
Okay.
But also, if we're being pedantic about motions, under point two,
it should be moved.
It says that you moved, and then it says that I motion.
I call for a motion, and then you move. Number two, or what point did you say?
You could add called for after your name. Called for a motion to approve the minutes.
Called for
a motion to approve the minutes. That's all I have. You'd be pleased to know.
With those friendly amendments, I motion to approve the minutes.
Second it.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. Is there any? Are there any call for a late addition to the agenda? Evan?
I'm happy to give an update. I know you were at the meeting too, but I'm happy to give an update about the trustee resolution we passed at our last meeting.
And Ramsey?
I was also hoping to include in discussion on, in terms of committees, campus culture specifically, and then also something that I've been meaning to bring up to you guys as well, an update on Cornell Bookstore, as well as something else that I'm pushing for through class council, and then I'm going to introduce it to the essay as well.
Can I ask what that is to put it on the agenda? Sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Just like a couple words.
I mentioned it last year at New York Times, but it was essentially creating a site that would centralize all the information that's happening in through student government,
okay,
whether that be class council, essay, or the UA, and then also have a degree of accountability, at least for the students involved in these things.
Okay.
So it would post, it would have their blurb as they're running for re-election, and then it'll have the actions or the minutes of what's been going on.
All right, we'll get to that in new business. So let's start with committee updates. Code and Judicial Committee. If anyone wants to report out on that?
I think, it's all going here, but there's nothing to report on now, other than we've now established a regular meeting time.
Okay. When is your regular meeting time?
Wednesday afternoon, 4. Yeah, 4 o'clock.
Will we be having a meeting tomorrow? Okay.
Wednesday afternoon at 4 occasionally conflicts with the faculty's head. I don't know if that's
it. We did a dual, I don't know.
Yeah, it's called
dual. Yeah. Yeah. So we won the best time.
Okay. I'm just throwing that out.
Yeah.
Okay. Campus Welfare Committee?
Campus Welfare, I sent out a doodle. Only 3 responded, and of those 3 that responded, no times coincided, and I was actually wondering if we could just talk about strategies in terms of, you know, what to do. Should I just
you know, look at the two that coincided. I think there were two people that coincided on the time. Should I just make that the official time?
I think, well, you and you mentioned this before the meeting. I was thinking that if the other people on the committee are representing, like, the student assembly or the GPSA, maybe talk to the presiding officer and just to remind them that they are on the committee and they need to respond. That was just one thought, though.
Yeah, I would do another doodle poll.
Yeah.
Only 3 out of the 11 people responding. That's not really critical enough mass.
Maybe
if you get at least half, then...
Although, if I could comment on that, sometimes if you send out a doodle poll, only 3 or 4 people respond, but if you pick 2 times, give them a choice between those two, they'll be more likely to reply.
So just choose, like, 2 specific times.
Okay. It, just to get them started, sometimes.
That makes it easier.
It helps with, yeah, understanding.
Okay.
And, Randy, if you send out a doodle poll and, you know, 72 hours later, you're still getting meager results, please let Sean know and we'll look at how to engage behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it a specific assembly, group of assemblies reps, or is it cross-cutting, whatever it is, and then we'll figure out how we can help.
Okay.
Who we need
happy
to
bring down the iron fist of the GPSA. I've proven that I have vast amounts of power. I wonder if I could ask, do you have a even tentative a sort of sense for what your agenda might look like for this year? What sort of issues?
So I had a couple issues that I wanted to address, but I was hoping as well, like, other members have like agendas of their own. The things on top of my head were in terms of diversity, in terms of inclusion. Those are some things that I wanted to address. And then I guess I wanted to address, senses of community, and in terms of class council initiatives and analyzing how effective they are in bringing classes together. So.
I think there was also some interest in revisiting the child care center status and those issues, making sure that they haven't completely fallen off the radar.
On the question of sense of community, not to, because I know we have to talk until 5 o'clock. I'll throw this out.
Okay.
The GPSA did a survey last year of graduate professional students, and we did have some questions about sense of community. We, of course, don't have class council, so that's, we face some different issues, so I'd be happy to share that data with you.
And I know that Tanya is here, but today there was a survey sent to staff members of the university about, and I thought it was a good survey, I took it, about, you know, what do you think, do you understand where the university is headed? You know, do you feel the staff are valued? I mean, it covered from small to large. It was a really good survey. I don't know how the results are going to be promulgated. I mean, it's been asked, the EA championed it. It's happening. Where did the results go? I assume to the administration, but how will the rest of us learn the results?
So they're going to share the results with the EA.
Okay.
And they're also going to put the results on the web in a generic form. You know, they're not going to drill down as they marry, because they'll be able to look across units, departments, across the campus. We'll get kind of a overview that'll go out for them.
So do you know who is in charge of the surveys again? I think you mentioned the name.
There's a name.
It's Maureen Clarkberg.
Yes.
In institutional research.
And this is just something for your committee to be aware of. If there's no issue identified, then great. But if there is an issue, then you may or may not have, you know, some interest in following, helping follow up on. Mm-hmm. Yes, there was.
Okay, so we'll move on to Campus Infrastructure Committee. I don't know if Jim or Sean, I mean.
Yeah. We had our first meeting last week on Tuesday. I think it went well. We got some very, a lot of good turnout for the first meeting. People seemed pretty interested in a variety of topics. And yes, like timely topics, especially with TCAT being more in the news. And so I think we're off to a good start.
Do you see anything coming forward at this point?
We're going to meet with David Lieb on next week. He's going to come talk to us about the status of different transportation issues on campus. So I think transportation is going to definitely be a major focus, and then with other issues coming too, especially like catching up on what past like sustainability committees have looked at and proposed, and see what the status of those proposed actions are.
There's a new initiative out announced last Friday at the State of the University, just after the State of the University address, for a new building for the humanities.
Mm-hmm.
And I know also, and we may learn more tonight, but I think somewhere between, I guess it was a leadership breakfast, I learned that the new tech campus is supposed to be LEED whatever, I mean totally energy neutral or whatever term they use. I mean literally.
So the building will provide power for itself, is what the idea is.
I think in the Chronicle of Higher Education, it will be the largest building on the East Coast that will provide enough power to run itself.
Going off of that, like another thing that we talked about is maybe having more involvement in like the actual building infrastructure and sustainability going along with that. And then another person brought up students becoming more involved in the sustainability when it comes to the buildings on campus. Like you said, transportation, parking, the buses, different options for how we can increase transportation options and everything. And then also with IT, just working to have all the constituencies served in like a unified way and Wi-Fi everywhere.
There's an essay committee to as well.
Okay.
Talking about IT things might be interesting to see. I forget the title of the committee. But and the GCSA last year, we don't anymore, but we had a sustainability committee. And I can certainly put you in touch with some of the more involved folks over there if you're interested in student perspectives on getting involved. One particular person, Jolien, is a physics graduate student, and very involved with a number of issues on campus. So grassroots graduate student sustainability thing.
Good.
Phil has come in. Phil, we've already gone by the Codes and Judicial Committee. Will kind of gave us a outbrief on the doodle polls. Is the meeting going to be Wednesdays at 4?
Yes, 4 to 5.
4 to 5?
And
when do we know when our first will be?
Well, we just, as of Sunday, we're completely staffed. And I'm in the process now of creating the agenda. I just actually got an email from Mary Beth Grant. And I'm meeting with her the next few days because she says she has a lot she wants to have on the agenda, but it'd be lengthy to type it to sort of meet with me. And I've also reached out to Professor Claremont at the law school, and he has some things he'd like to put on the agenda. And
Title IX or new? Do you know?
A little bit of both. I mean, Professor Claremont was specifically the Title IX stuff, but Mrs. Grant wanted to put some more stuff on there. So I'm in the process of creating the agenda, and then hopefully next week, I'm hoping. Just kind of remember that.
Kevin Claremont is on the committee. Is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you.
No problem.
He's a one-man corporate.
One announcement I would have regarding all these committees is there are mailing lists set up for them. And I thought I would circulate the addresses for them by email, but for each committee, there's also an info list that anybody can subscribe to that you can use to push out public announcements like anything from agendas. And we had sort of marketed these as a way for people to be members of the committees when there was a larger membership, or some of the more focused committees that used to exist, like family care and child care. Basically, this provides a way for them to know what's going on with the committee if the meeting dates get announced on the list with a few days' notice. everybody who has an interest in them usually to the list.
And if I can make a kind of an ad hoc remark, this is my fourth year on the University Assembly, and it seems like either there isn't a lot of issues being raised or we're off to a slow start. I mean, I'm not in search of issues, but I'm surprised we haven't had several resolutions already beginning to flow through. So I guess for all the constituent assemblies and everything, just I assume everybody's got their ears open and are talking to people. If everybody's reasonably happy, great. But it seems like we're
kind of can I say something?
Hmm?
Yeah, I feel like we're off to a slow start. Personally, I don't feel comfortable, you know, just recently forming committees or starting to meet as committees. Near the end of October, half the semester's gone. So I definitely think that I think we are to a slow start. That I have been collecting lists in terms of when our first meeting, you know, what are the things that we're going to discuss. Like I started numbering things, not like about 7 things back at home.
Well, and like I said, you will talk to the committees, and you will have issues, or you won't. I'm concerned that we're going to get a crunch towards the end of the semester, and you know, it does take time to work through some of these things if people do have meaningful resolutions to move forward. And so please don't be kinder, gentler in allowing meetings to get further delayed. If you can, I mean, don't be timid about it. We're all trying to do it, and we're there to help. Everyone's here to help. I have a sense of the same thing. And maybe it's not an issue, but I suspect there's stuff out there.
Yeah. One thing that came to the EA just very briefly at the end of our last meeting, an employee came in and a TCAT schedule that had been running, I don't know if you guys have heard about this yet, but a TCAT schedule that's been running out towards Richford and North Valley Way, they're actually changing that line, which will affect a number of staff members and second faculty who need to commute in from that way. They'll no longer have their bus service, and they've just been notified that this is going to happen in December. December 1st. So they just brought that to us, and we're trying to find out how many people really will be affected by this. And we have transportation coming to an upcoming EA meeting to talk a little bit, but that's something that we're looking at.
I know that we had our infrastructure meeting before that came out, but that got emailed out over the people, so it'll be something we'll address the next meeting.
Yeah, and one of the issues they brought up as well is that there is a park and ride area that is right at the edge of where the bus new route will change to, but you can't park there from like November 1st to April 1st because of the snow plow turnaround. That doesn't help them.
Well, and thinking related to campus welfare, but broader, we've had Binghamton underwater. We've had a lot of our nearby towns underwater. We have a lot of staff that live there. And I've seen a couple of emails circulated on how people might help, but this has got to be affecting, I know it's affecting staff in my department, and I know some staff in others who, and everybody seems to be doing okay, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's still people without solid heat. I know some people getting electricity back, but they still didn't have water heaters replaced yet, and things like that, and winter's closing in. So, again, I don't know that the University Assembly has any resolutions to pass. People are caring and seem to be stepping up, but I can't believe that there aren't more issues out there, and maybe people, I don't know where to turn or where they might turn constructively.
And we've been working a lot with the folks in the CARE Fund who have given us a significant number of grants, and the university's really jumped in and helped in that way. We were pretty much depleted of funds. And we just finished the auction for that and raised just about $12,000. So we started to bring that fund back up.
Well, I know the university also gave extra time off, and so there definitely was a concerted effort. So I'm not aware of any issues, but it's still, it's not like that problem's gone away.
So we'll move to new business. I don't. have the time, but I don't think it's out of pocket. So do we want to skip A and or to live until President Scorton comes and go to the trustee resolution update?
So this past Friday, the very sane and humane hour of 7 a.m., several just students were invited to meet with some members of the Board of Trustees, four members of the Board of Trustees, who are all on the Committee on Board Membership that's specifically assigned to the task force to look at this particular issue, namely the role of student representatives on the Board of Trustees. It was a productive discussion. I think a lot of interesting things were talked about. The sense that I got is that the board is not seriously considering the addition of another seat, so raising the size of the board from 64 to 65. We'll have to wait for an official ruling, but I don't think that's likely to happen. I think they were slightly more interested in this, in the observer role that Alex discussed at our last meeting, wherein one student would serve as a non-voting member for 1 year and then alternate back and forth. I think they saw it very much as a communication issue, which is, of course, what our discussion centered around last time. You know, it's a 64-member body. Obviously, this is not about the vote. You know, having one more student with a vote is not going to change the direction. And for that matter, as several trustees mentioned at this meeting, it's rare that anything is contentious. Usually what they happen is they have a healthy debate, work out all of the various issues, and then end up passing things unanimously. But one particular person said they couldn't even remember the last time there had been a recorded vote. So it's not about the vote, it's about communication. And they saw it very much as you know, if there seems to be this much concern on the campus about the role that student representatives have, then we, the board, they said, are not doing our jobs. We're not visible enough on campus. We're not communicating enough with people to tell them what we're doing. So they asked for the feedback of the group, basically, how can we do more to make ourselves more visible, to make sure that we have a broader presence on campus when we're around. One idea that came up would be having, in the same way that deans are invited to meetings with the Board of Trustees, that students might also be invited. I don't know where non-faculty employees stand with regard to a presence at the Board of Trustees meeting. That when they're in town, that they would continue having more informal meetings like this, a sort of breakfast meeting with a select membership of the Board of Trustees. And I heartily endorse those notions, certainly. They asked specifically, how can we identify student leaders? I certainly offer the GPSA as the body that would be willing to recruit people to attend such meetings.
I would say that, you know, from the communication from the trustees that's available to the general populace, from my perspective, and I could be missing some websites or something, is not very robust. I have to do several corporate filings for our department for the university, and I have to get minutes through the legal office after vetted. And, you know, in other words, there's not a publicly consumable, what did the trustees do this month or at this one of their three key meetings. That isn't really published, and I think that's mainly for legal liability issues. If they have a public website that shows their initiatives and where they're going, like at the State of the University address, they talked about all the inroads in diversity, and I heard facts and figures, and yet none of those briefings, am I aware of, are available online unless you were to watch the State of the University address and they're in there. You know, so there is kind of a, you know, they meet with people all the time, but where they're going, the university has a strategic plan, and you can read the plan, but you can't easily find out where we think we are in relation to it on a quarterly or semi-annual basis kind of thing. So there are some things they can do to assist the trustees.
I think that I would say that I, the sense that I got was that wasn't what they meant. They didn't mean we were going to try and be more open about what we're doing rather they want to be more open about what they do, you know, what the function of the Board of Trustees is and how they can play a role in what happens on campus.
And it seems like, sorry.
So I was going to say, if you have a particular kind of concern, then approaching a member of the board might be appropriate. To that end, they held some other members of the board attended a listening session that was miserably attended last Tuesday. I thought that kind of thing was a great idea, but I think part of the reason people don't go, there were more trustees there than there were people. I guess I was there. There were more trustees than there were audience members, and I think a lot of that is because people, in generally speaking, are vaguely aware of the board's existence, never mind what the function of the Board of Trustees actually is. You know, Cornell is a private corporation. It's run by a board, and that board elects the president, and so on and so forth. I think people are not generally aware of the governance structure. Sorry, no.
I was just going to say something else. I feel like I agree with everything that Evan just said. I also got the impression that they were really interested in hearing from the students more, like, in a, to hear what our issues are. And they, I think the idea at the end of the meeting was kind of brought up about their committees and maybe students having a voice in their committee rather than directly on the Board of Trustees. So that's another idea. If there's nothing else on that, we'll move on to the update on the bookstore from Ramsey.
Yes. So in terms of the bookstore, I'm not sure who is here and who wasn't before we started, but essentially when I spoke to them, they clarified the relationship they had between publishers and their need to, you know, constantly give new editions of books, constantly sell them. It's a dying profession. And yeah, that's what they said. Not word for word, but I mean, the gist of it. And their accountability, the bookstore's accountability to students and consumers. And so, my understanding from them is that, you know, they're viewed as the enemies from like both sides, I guess, because the publishers want to sell everything to them, and the students want to get a nice buy from the store. But the Cornell store can't really afford to do too many price slashes, I guess, or like decrease the price significantly, because they run themselves. They don't get, as far as my understanding goes, they're not funded by Cornell. So they're self-sufficient, and they are required, I think, to give a certain amount of money to Cornell.
They're required to cover their costs.
Yes. So in terms of the issues that I wanted to see answered, if I remember correctly, from I wanted to answer number one, are they do they have the book list, and are they disclosing the book list or slash willing to disclose the book list? Those were in question. Do they have the book list? Yes. They make them every year, and essentially as soon as they finish with one, they're starting for next year's. Are they willing to disclose that book list to are they willing to disclose that book list to other vendors, including Crafties? No. It's more they feel that they've worked hard for it. They have the same Crafties have the same contacts in achieving you know, those book lists themselves, so they feel that I guess it's right for theirs, and I kinda agree. What I do kinda wanna push for though is that I want them more educated in terms of the students being more well aware of this relationship with the bookstore. That's the first one. And the second thing is I feel that there should be, I guess, not a direct pressure on professors to submit books, but I guess a motion from both sides to say, hey, you know, we're not 100% with this, and this book list may be tentative, there may be only 60% or 70%, but here it is. So from that respect, the major courses and the courses that have generally been, you know, the same over the course of the years is consistent, students can find better deals.
Okay, if we could detail that discussion, we'll come back to it and discuss it.
and go back to new business A with the discussion of President Horton.
You guys have nice gold or yellow county line. County got to have like a white or black one, right?
I was saying that you had a nicer font than I did. So.
See, but I like those sensory fonts like you guys have.
Can't win,
all right? You became president.
You mean by distracting? Is that what you mean? Anyways, good to see you guys.
You've been busy.
Yeah, we've had a busy little period of time here. Things are good, but tell me what you want to hear about, and I'll talk about it. Do you want me to give you a sort of general update? A few minutes and then answer questions. Is that okay, Randy? I sort of cut back. So we just had trustee council weekend, those of you who want to do it, either listen to the speech or read it. If you have problems falling asleep or staying asleep, and you read that speech, that will put you into a sleep mode and keep you refreshed for 6 to 8 hours. You wake up feeling good. No aftertaste, nothing like that. I restated in there the four areas that I want to continue to focus on during now the sesquicentennial. Need-based student financial aid, faculty renewal, meaning hiring ahead of their retirements. Different emphasis on public engagement, which the faculty produced a strategic plan, emphasized bringing public engagement efforts together as much as possible with the curriculum and research focus of the university. And then internationalization. At the Einaudi Center 50th anniversary symposium, which is November 14, I'm going to give a personal verbal op-ed about internationalization at Cornell. So I reviewed those areas. I talked about this new building for the humanities on the other side of Golden Smith, which when we get the project done, we're doing it all on philanthropy. We're 75% of the way there. When we get that done, we'll be the first building on the Arts Quad related to the humanities since 1905, which would be nice. And we're rounding third base, precisely rounding third base on that. And I have hopes that we'll be done with that, done with the philanthropy by the 1st of January, so that we can go ahead with the plan for actual construction. Friday, Kent Fox is filing the Cornell's response to the RFP for the New York City Tech Campus, and we'll see what happens with that. I spent a lot of time working on that. And then the last thing is that we have gotten approval from the board to expand the philanthropic effort from $4 billion to $4.75 billion. We're $3.4 billion now. And that'll be good. We're already at a record for Cornell, and we're already among five schools that have ever raised money at this level. But I think we need to raise the remainder of the money up to $4.75 in order to keep the need-based student financial aid safe long into the future and to complete the faculty renewal initiative. Just to remind you about the faculty renewal, the idea there was to raise an additional $50 million over 5 years, 10 years on average, to be matched by $50 million from money that the deans already have toward hiring, and use that extra money to hire ahead of retirement. You can't predict when people will retire, except in a statistical sense. You can't predict with precision. But instead of waiting until those resources become available, since Cornell has the liquidity to hire right now, we felt with a little more liquidity we could get out ahead of some of the other schools that are, you know, with whom we compete for faculty hires. And the first year of the program, we did much more than we had projected in philanthropy, and we're hoping to keep that up year after year. So it was a lot of positive things in that sense. We're almost exactly 90% of the way toward the balanced budget that we started 3 years ago. just 89% of the theirs. Closing in on that last 10-11%. Everybody's had a, try to be transparent about how we're going to get there. It's all the different initiatives that are going on. And just today we decided that within a couple of weeks, Carmen will have an update to the campus and the Cornell Chronicle about how all that's going.
Friday next week.
So that's just a quick rundown. And I'm glad to answer questions about any of those things or anything else you want to talk about. And I have till 5:30 when I meet the Daily Sun editorial board, which should be like much harder.
The first conversation I ever had with Tom was about shared governance and your commitment to shared governance. A couple of years ago, the University Assembly passed the resolution, and the people that were on the Assembly at the time started walking to Bill Giorsi, Ellis Lowe, and I, four biologists. They wanted to know something about how the biology curriculum was being changed, because it didn't seem clear to us. You believed it was clear and open and not excluding. I disagree, but I think since then there's been very similar things that have happened. And those things I'm not an insider on, like the Africana Center or the Cornell Council for the Arts. But with my experience, I can believe that it wasn't inclusive and was excluding. And I know the people in AIM, right? No, I can't say people. One person came to me today, are kind of wondering about what's going to happen to their departments from whatever forces that are. My question is, how do you ensure that the people that are most affected by certain decisions made at the university at different levels are actually involved in the communication before the fact and not after the fact?
Yeah, it's a very fair question. Ensure is the verb that you use. I guess I would say a couple of things. First of all, I think it's always worth restating that that's the goal, for sure. Maybe I could talk for a couple of minutes, if it doesn't seem tangential to me, about how I do decision-making at the university. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay. So, and for that matter, shared governance, I think that there, sort of a Venn diagram in a sense, I think there are some areas of decision-making at the university that are devolved to the faculty, that administrators like me at my age, who grew up in this kind of system, you know, with tenure, sort of old, long-standing traditions, will fight to the death to make sure that the content of courses, admissions decisions, input and admissions decisions, those kind of things are faculty prerogatives. I believe they are at Cornell. The organization, one step above the department program, or two steps above the college level, is where you begin to get some potential conflicts if things like this happen. There's no sense you're going to be discussing again the difference of opinion we have about whether the biology curriculum thing. You're not bringing that up today, but I think that if something occurs and the people who were normally wanting to be involved in it or should have been involved in it think not, there are well-trod paths that challenge and appeal the decision. In the case of the occasional decision, and I think it's demonstrable that at most it's occasional, where there's unusual circumstances and something's decided top-down, which I can count on one hand the number of times I've done that in 9 years of being present in one place or another, I guess I have to be not combative about it, but not apologetic. And just to remind everybody, when the recession hit, I made a few decisions that I'm very proud of, that I just want to share with you, that caused other things to happen by a sort of a ripple effect. And so the first decision I made is we were going to shrink the upper administration. I eliminated two vice presidencies, cut my own salary, and asked that Ken shrink the provost office. He shrank the provost office. and decided to take four programs out of the provost's office that were being administered there and required more people to help do it. They were Council for the Arts, CIPA, Africana, and I'm embarrassed I can't remember the fourth one. But there was a fourth one that was in the provost's office, and he moved them all out. In that period of time, as many people here know intimately, we reduced the staff workforce almost 10%, like nothing that's ever happened here at any school in our project. Times have been going on.
Real estate.
Real estate program, thanks. Real estate support program. And in that circumstance, I thought it was incredibly important to not allow any of those funds that we have saved to be shoved back in by forcing the reversal of course on where it can be reported, seek or whatever. To this day, I must tell you that the great preponderance of evidence that I've seen, much of which was gathered before my time at Cornell, suggested that the Africana reporting to the provost office was a very, very unusual circumstance. The term used by the external review group that was called in here in 2005 is that it was anomalous. That was a term they used. And I believe that the decision about where a unit is going to report, given that everything else about the unit stays the same, physical location, the resources are the same or better, I think that decision is in the purview of the upper administration. It's not a shared governance kind of decision. That's my point of view. Those decisions happen very, very uncommonly. I'll tell you another one I did, because I want to be open about it. I didn't go out and ask the shared governance system if we should upstream financially, even though it has ramifications. It's a massive amount of money. It constrains the amount of money available for other things, including faculty hiring. The third one, I decided we're not going to sell any more debt for buildings until we get deleveraged a little bit on the balance sheet. I also didn't go to the shared governance group to talk about that. I did go to the UFC at the time that I decided to not have a raise for 1 year for anybody. Those who are on the UFC may recall that. And I said, how would you feel about us not giving raises next year at all in the interest of reducing, attenuating the number of layoffs that we have at the staff level? The UFC didn't pass a resolution unanimously, so that seems reasonable for 1 year. And I talked a bit to some other groups about it at that time. So, I'm not saying I couldn't have screwed up. When I retire, I'm going to write a book of memoirs called Score of Greatest Hits, all the things that I struck out on. But the principles that the vast majority of decisions are made in people's own individual lives, but that occasionally you have to make a decision at a higher level, I just have to defend that. Otherwise, you wouldn't need administrators of all of any kind. And the Africana was in the context of emptying out those things from the provost office. And there was no compelling counter-argument except tradition. And tradition's important to a certain extent, but I don't want to get too passionate about this, but finally, we had a provost who wanted to invest money in Africana, wanted to start a PhD program to pump up the number of faculty, and wanted it therefore to be run like every other academic program in the whole institution where you give degrees, and that is having a college. As just like CIPA, you know, giving an MPH or something to that. So I'm not arguing that you have to agree that it was the right decision, but the consistency of the approach is just something I'm finding it across. I think the student leaders in the essay, Vince, the essay president last year, at an essay meeting and a meeting of student leaders said that they thought it was very important that I brought to them issues that we were thinking about doing earlier in the student leaders group that we have. We have SA, GPSA, IFC, Panhell, Daily Sun Editor, and Multicultural Greek, a letter, and one other student, I can't think of what it is. And we're doing that this year. And the SA has also agreed to send me things ahead of when they become resolutions, just in terms of things that are actually on the agenda. And I'm glad to do that with UA. I'm glad to do that with UFC, I'm glad to do that with EA. I'm willing to learn more, willing to change approaches if you think I'm not hitting the mark. I try to be much more transparent than the university is used to otherwise. The dean of faculty comes to, is invited to all my staff meetings, and comes to like 90%+ of them. And so my intentions are good. I think the principles are unassailable from my point of view. We could definitely argue by individual, you know, cases and decisions, absolutely. But that's where I came from.
I don't disagree with anything you said. And I want to say something that I thought was odd, but true. In the comments in the Sun to Don Randall's, the questions he answered after he gave his comment, he said he was against what happened. He was saddened about what happened to the theater arts, to the theater department. And now that he's an emeritus faculty, he can say whatever he wants. And I actually believe there's a culture of fear at Cornell, where people, for one reason or another, don't feel that they have. Are not courageous enough to speak up when they should. And that comes from us, but it also can come down where it says, you know, this is the place where we really do want you to speak your mind.
I mean, one expedient that I think is always at people's disposal, and if I haven't been clear enough about this, I apologize. But when I first came here, I gave everybody my credit email. It's only read by me, none of my assistants, plus probably the NSA, 10,000. But other than that, nobody else reads it. And I've told students, faculty, staff, parents, and alumni what that email is. I get a wild amount of email. But if I haven't said that clearly enough, I apologize. If somebody wants to say something that they're concerned about, could have, you know, ramifications in terms of some retaliatory thing or whatever, and want me not to share the name, the source of it, but share the content. I've made that offer again and again, and I'm glad to make it again. If I haven't been clear about it again, I apologize. You can use me for that. If somebody doesn't know who's bringing up the issue, and it's not presented in a way the person identified, there's no possible way for retaliatory action. The worst thing would be if people felt that there was a limit to their ability to, you know, get on their hind legs and talk about stuff. So I don't know how to get that across, except I got to say it more frequently. I haven't said that in a couple, 3 years since I went out to start doing it this way. I've gotten tons and tons and tons of stuff from parents, students, staff, a little trickle from faculty, but not zero, Randy, of people saying, you know, I'm really concerned about this. I don't want to stand up by me, but I'd like you to look into this. And I have looked into every one of them. I haven't always changed the thing, but I've taken it without the person's name, you know, redacted all that stuff. And sometimes if it looked like there was no way not to be identifiable by the nature of the issue, you know, like something happened, it would be clear that it was their particular right. I've just taken it verbally to the person. So it's a service I would do in some sense, absolutely. And I must tell you, the gentleness of the Cornell atmosphere is palpable since I've been here. It's a very gentle campus. I mean, I don't know whatever other word to use except general. It's sort of a stupid word, but you know, other places I've been have not been, you know, horror shows by any means, but not as gentle as the way people treat each other here, right from the board all the way through. But I make that offer again quite openly. Take me up on it.
Just a suggestion. Fear would not be the term I would use, but there definitely is a trepidation bringing things up, and especially when there's constriction and job loss, that nobody wants to be necessarily a squeaky wheel if they don't really feel like it's falling on the sword. But I also can tell you that from the college level, the deans, they do not have what I would call small group form, where I see you enough in different things, I actually would feel comfortable if I really had something important to email you. I would take you up on that. I believe you're sincere. I've never had similar conversations or seen similar forums with deans and other people where people get to know them enough and feel that they could trust to actually bring certain things up to them. In other words, and if you're holding a forum for an entire college, well, who's going to...
That's a different story, yeah.
But I mean, they need to get out there and a certain percentage of time, and I know these are extremely busy people, to meet their staff, to meet with people, and be approachable, and then they will be approached. Mostly constructively, and sometimes, you know, but...
Well, people can definitely disagree, so let me work on that. It's a very good point. And, you know, I wish I would have heard this yesterday, just because today would happen to be one of those periodic meetings where I met with all the deans and all the VPs, but I'll make it my business to get this across to the
Your leadership would be key, and I think you set a good example, but I don't see them following, because you're the spokesman for the university, they do it in a much more quiet way from my perspective.
Yeah, and if I could expand that, between the deans and the VPs, everybody works for one of those people, and including the provost in New York City. So let me work on that. Let me work on that with Tommy from a broad, smart communications perspective. Let me work on it behind the scenes as well. I promise you I'll work on it. It's a very good point. Without attribution, if we brought it up. No, because it's not important to brought up. It's important.
Management 101.
Well, it's actually important that the UA brought it up, is what I'm saying, not whoever brought it up.
Sure.
The UA is the only body that I'm aware of that combines all the shared governance. Please.
So one of the points you mentioned is not taking on debt for new construction. Perfectly fair. Certainly I agree 100% with that decision, given the context, and understand furthermore why you wouldn't approach the shared government system making that decision. My question is as we've had this tech campus discussion that's been going on in the past few weeks, and of course I want to be very clear, I give my unequivocal support to that proposal. We sent you our resolution, which will be passed unanimously. One of the things in there that I think really encourage people to support it, including the Board of Trustees, was the assurance that this wouldn't impact the Ithaca campus, that the philanthropy would come independently, and that there would be a separate business model that would run that closed campus in New York City. Again, I think that's great. A particular issue that affects graduate students, and I know this has been mentioned before, is the Big Red Barn and Maplewood. And these are two buildings that are, shall we say, getting on in years. The Big Red Barn, the Big Red Barn, I mean, just looking at the numbers, fits maybe 200 people. We have 7,000 graduate professional students at this school, and Maplewood is past its lifespan. I guess my question is, understanding that these buildings are not going to be replaced or upgraded in the near future, because I know that the financial climate is too difficult, it would be wonderful if the administration could work towards presenting some sort of, not a plan even, but a commitment of some kind to say, you know, in 5 years, in 10 years, in 30 years, whatever it is, we want to be precise about this. The answers that I've heard are, we know it exists, we know this is a concern, but we can't deal with it right now. Maybe someday. Like I say, this is not a question I know maybe that you can answer now.
I can give you somewhat of an answer. I have to add a third facility that connect. It also affects the industry, because Gannett needs great expansion or replacement with other kind of facility. So we're struggling with Maplewood, to be honest, I haven't been focusing on as much as the Big Red Barn, which is a much more minor project, and Gannett, but I just wrote it down. Without getting into a lot of economics, which I barely understand, but know the nomenclature of, it's looking like 3 years from now, with a lot of assumptions about endowment earnings, philanthropy, and projections of tuition increases, student financial aid needs at the undergraduate level, that the university would be in a position to begin to sell long-term tax-exempt bonds. And it's just close enough on the horizon this year, Evan, that we're in right now, that we can start talking a little bit about what that might mean. So the New York City campus, we've already said publicly that we're not going to take debt, and we're not going to take money out of the endowment, and so we're just going to have to figure it out, you know, largely through philanthropy and negotiating with the city and so on. But these things, I'll tell you exactly what's going to happen, and try to be as open and try not to be offensive to anyone. This is going to come down to a prioritization of academic buildings that were put on a back burner by me. Don't blame anybody else but me. in 08-09 versus Gannett, Big Red Barn, Maplewood, I think your word for is one of those, I'm just not as familiar, and other things that are very important in terms of support of student life and faculty and staff life when it comes to Gannett. I mean, I go to Gannett for some, you know, health care, travel, stuff like that. And the view of that master plan for the Ithaca campus that was developed in different times, in more flush times. And we haven't faced those choices. We haven't faced those choices that would have to be made. But this is something we're talking about a lot. Because, I guess to put it a different way, when 3 years go by, or whatever the right amount of time is, as soon as we can, and we can start selling bonds again, who's first on deck? And we can't decide that the day that the ratio comes in, just right, we have to talk about it as a campus. And there's an example where not just the shared governance, but sort of community discussion understanding is going to be key, because not everybody's going to be number one on that list, or the first five. Another one that I'm very worried about in the same context is whether the state's going to keep investing in the contract side of the house through the State University Construction Fund. That right now, they're investing like crazy in it. I suppose in part to keep people working in the construction and trade industry, which is fine. And, you know, right now we have Warren and Stocking, you know, being worked on in a big way. And we've waited for, help me, some of you guys, 20 years for this to happen, something in that order of magnitude. And so the next year I'm waiting to see falls is, is the state able, based on revenue constraints, to keep putting money throughout the state, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars into this. So we're now beginning to talk about how to begin to look at those prioritizations. And so it's very timely, and I will take back to Susan Murphy and Joanne DiStefano and the rest of the group that makes those capital decisions, this very question that you asked. And once again, I'll attribute it to the UA. It's a very important question. When's the next time I meet with everybody?
About a month from now. It's a little bit more at the moment
I know, but I'm trying to think of when I can report back to you in this regard.
All right, do you have something scheduled yet?
Is there anything more this semester?
Not usually this
semester. No,
okay.
We meet with you once a semester.
So let's get the spring one. It's the Petrosco, my scheduling downtrodden colleague, is waiting for me to weigh in on a couple decisions about the spring, which I'm going to do this very weekend. And so at least we'll get a date on the books. To the extent that any of these things that you could bring back to in the meantime would be great. And this one I'll look at.
Why not? I think it would be a good idea for us to do that. Follow up on
I got to go Facebook, meet the press now. Meet the Daily Sun. So it's good to see you. Much.
Thank you.
I was actually wondering, does anyone have his email address, or should I just search up?
David Dutch Gordon at.
Yeah. As opposed to president.
Because I was just wondering, in terms of, you know, how the Tech campus fit in with, you know, the building bridges plan that he's about to meet up with on November 15th, 16th. As well as the council, the Southern Tier Regional Economic Development Council. And more specifically, I was concerned about how it would affect employees, because from what I've read, at least, you know, some people would move over to the Tech campus, some would stay here in Ithaca, and others would commute. So I guess I was more concerned about the people commuting between back and forth. So
we kind of got at the leadership breakfast.
Yeah.
We got a sense of some of this, and I can't frankly remember what was releasable yet and what wasn't. Some was we were the first to be seen, and but I can tell you that from the level of community and stuff, it isn't even worked out. They have a concept, But they were pretty clear, at least this was my perspective, that if we win, they have a set of details that need to be worked through pretty quickly. They seem to be aware of the list. Nothing that was said to them seemed to surprise them, but they also were not either unwilling to engage in those details until victory is declared or not. Our concern on the details, or my personal concern on the details, was they want to start having classes in 2013. So, golly, there should be some details. There ought to be a playbook that's already drafted if we win. But
did you regret 2012?
Oh, well.
Starting next fall.
Yes. December.
December.
By the end of the year. This year.
Yeah. And they're supposed to, if I understood, let bidders know who the finalists are. There might be one, might be two, November 18th. There's a blackout period.
Starting Friday.
Unfortunately, I think once this thing goes in, and I don't remember whether it started then or a week later, but then there's like a blackout, a blackout period while I guess everybody in New York City figures out who they want to make the finalists, and then depending on that decision, you know. So I'm not sure what you'll be able to get out of the Cornell Daily Sun or others. They're not forbidden from talking about it somewhat. You know, rah-rah talking about it, but the details.
The Sun is allowed to say whatever they want. The administration.
Right.
They pointed out at that meeting, if I recollect, that alumni and students who are not paid by Cornell are free to say whatever they want.
The problem is knowing what's going on and getting straightening out the facts to what is said. So, we had a lot of practical questions, and at our last meeting, which I think you were at, how would this work? How would the degrees work? How would the faculty work? Which is there going to be a pull on certain kinds of faculty and a drain? They say it's not going to affect, but that doesn't seem realistic.
Yeah.
I think it's more like how do we manage the effects? That's a personal editorial, and we.
And I think that even though they want to start classes like next year, it'd be a serious ramp up. The start would not be many faculty there.
Yeah, it was going to be 2,000 students and 200 faculty staff. I assume this was the end of the 30 years, not in year one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the entire campus, $1 billion to $2 billion, is going to be done by philanthropy and student tuition. Their capital campaign was $350 million to break ground on the initial building, or subset of buildings. And but it was going to grow. And I just didn't see $350 million nearly covering the bill with 2,000 students of tuition making up the rest.
In three days, we'll all be able to read 500 pages.
Will it be a public accessible submission?
I understand that it will be public.
Cool. I didn't realize that.
So Ramsey will read 500 pages, and he'll report back to it.
He will read it. I believe he will.
Bookstore will sell it to you first.
I think, just to go off that, since it is going to be 500 pages, that there definitely should be a mechanism where some aspects of this are, you know, in simplistic terms, are, you know, broadcast to people. So considering, you know, this is going to affect faculty here and employees, and that, you know, faculty are going to have to make provisions, you know, that need to be proactive in terms of going down to New York City or getting housing or things of that nature. You know, I think there should be some mechanism that, you know, takes these key points of how it's going to affect everyone and needs to be broadcast.
You know what? You raise a good point. It's like we might recommend to our colleagues on the different bodies to make sure they download the report and scan it for things that are in their area of purview and begin the list of questions and or concerns or Yahoo's, because the Big Red Barn is going to be moved to Roosevelt Island or something.
Hopefully the Sun will.
Well, I'm sure they will help, but you know.
Beer stays cheap.
It would be very good if somebody here, you could tell us when this thing is available and how we can download. I mean, because
what we really should try and do, if we've got hold of it, is split this job up amongst us and say, okay, you get this big part and you get that part. And I take the point, I really think we should read this carefully, rapidly, so we know what's happening. And to get the job done, we ought to have a division of labor on it.
Well, this is where I was surprised to just learn that this may be publicly available at the submission point, because if there's a blackout period, you and I are paid from Cornell, and yeah. I mean, I am not briefed in the blackout rules.
I'm not paid from Cornell.
There you go.
my understanding is they're not allowed to engage in further PR.
Yeah, well, I mean, from the standpoint of, we want to work constructively, because if there's something in there that seems to say upset faculty, I'm sure the first thing the university doesn't want to see is an article in the local paper or the Daily Sun about, I can't believe XYZ in the middle of the people in New York City trying to determine who's going to win, and all of a sudden the Ithaca faculty seem to be in an uproar, and it may or may not bear foundation, and the people who could answer your questions are in a blackout period. So be responsible. No, I'm talking. I'm just talking about if you have problems.
Like. And we've been there too.
Yeah.
Right. And that's not what he was saying.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is if you read it, and if it's available, and if you read it and you've got concerns, go through the proper path before the boat horn.
Reason we should look at it as a group. So
yeah.
Because our input as the university assembly is important. We can get some more.
Well, I'm happy to, unless somebody else has a better idea, I'm happy to send the provost an email and ask him, what's the deal with the report? Will we be able to get it right away, or just a portion of it, etc.?
Yeah, I would think it would be available at a later date. Not necessarily, because will we have access to Stanford's as well?
The sense that I've gleaned.
In the faculty senate, though, and the provost said to the faculty, if you want to see it, come to my office. All the papers coming up to whatever, because he didn't say we got to do this close to the vest. So I wouldn't know exactly what the report is in the context, because there are reports and reports and reports, and those are available, and I haven't actually gone over and looked at them. But that was the deal. No copies, no electronic copies in particular.
Well, I'm sure at this point that's true. But the submission at some point will be, I don't know if FOIA-able, because we're an academic institute, but...
Well, by the time it would be FOIA-able, it'd be too late.
Yeah.
But it's not clear that all of the documents would be available.
I would, like you said, personally, based on my experience, I would be surprised if the process is... that open, that especially the financial details and support. But if it is, great.
I'll send an email.
Well, I think the question hinges on whether the mayor wants to bargain. Remember, he's put in a small amount of money, a tremendous amount of money back, and he may well try and tweak it a little bit and say, are you willing to do this, Stanford, rather than,
That's exactly right.
So if that's going to go on, then surely it's going to be serious.
Exactly. And that's because I believe there will be a negotiation and or clarification, however you want to. Exactly what does Cornell mean by this? And, by the way, Stanford seems to,
point the right place.
Yeah. that's when they're best
dollars.
So.
Or shekels. Was anybody surprised, as I was, at the Technion?
I don't have any visibility to how that was approached. I was curious as to whether, because it was touted quite appropriately, but we also have a lot of relationships with Saudi Arabia and Qatar, and so in the international press, I'm sure that's got to be... There are discussion points there.
Technion certainly has expertise in generating industries. I mean, that's still the role that we can play. But it also must have appeal to the large Jewish population in New York City. Technion is coming to New York City. And I think it has a political implication.
certainly.
What's our agenda?
Yeah, so if we want to get back to the update on the bookstore, Ramsey just finished reporting out on it, so there's any discussion.
So I don't know where I left off, but I think it was in terms of answering those quick questions. Do they have those booklets? Yes, they do. Are they going to give them out? No, they worked hard for them, and Crafties has an equal opportunity in terms of contacting professors and getting those booklets themselves. So from that respect, I sympathize with the bookstore. However, I do believe that there should be a pressure, a degree of pressure exerted either on the professors or on the bookstore to say, at least from the bookstore's perspective, saying, hey, we're not the ones who are, responsible for these, these delays or for these incomplete books. Go talk to your professors. So in that respect, I guess it would benefit not only the bookstore, but it would benefit the students if the students took initiative as well in terms of, finding out what those books are. Overall, I feel that doing this would be shaky for the first 1 or 2 years. I feel that if you did exert a physical pressure on professors to do that, no one likes getting pressure to do things. But in terms of the classes, my main priority is getting as most as possible while being convenient. So I feel that at least 50% of classes are something that happen every fall semester, every spring semester, or twice a year. So from that respect, many of those lists, many of those books that are under consideration generally don't change. And that's something that I want to focus in on.
From your perspective, what would that pressure look like? I can give you sort of, as someone who's both a student and is teaching a class next semester where I've set my own books, in the past 6 weeks, I've probably received 8 emails from the bookstore saying, reminder, books are due, reminder, books are due. I've received emails from my department forwarding the other emails. I know when the books are due. Next Friday, November 4th. So what can you do beyond that? I think the Faculty Senate has even passed resolutions encouraging professors to do this. I know it's been incorporated into the faculty handbook. I know the GPSA and the SAA, I think, did a joint resolution 2 years ago saying we hereby encourage. I mean, what does pressure look like beyond that? If someone's not going to respond to the email.
I want to thank you for bringing that up to me, because I completely forgot about that point. They did stress that a lot during the meeting, that we, almost harassing professors for those booklets. And what I mean by pressure, I guess I want to redefine it. What I mean by that is just, advertising or making it public to say, bookstores like, hey, students, you should be more proactive in terms of this, or you should make it, I guess publicize the overall cycle of how books are compiled in terms of the list. And when that happens, the pressure or the antagonism is not so much directed at the bookstore necessarily, but it kind of diffuses, because when you have knowledge, it kind of dissipates all this, I guess all the anger or the pent-up anger, so to speak.
Go ahead. This is really a job for the dean of the faculty. I mean, the dean of the faculty represents the faculty administration, but he also represents the administration of the faculty. He should be out there raising hell and saying, look, you're really inconveniencing the students, you're costing them a hell of a lot of money and time and sweat. You ought to just get the stand book for the students. And I'm going to, go to the dean of your college, and I'm going to tell him and her that has to happen. And we'll see if we can't get this thing straightened out. I mean, you just...
What is the response rate for faculty in terms of getting the book list to the bookstore?
In terms of the book list getting returned, many people do respond, but you have, from what I remember, you have, generally about 30%, 30% of,
not responding in full.
Two-thirds respond, a third do not.
But that's 10 times as much as you want to have. I mean, it should be just a few of the real plates don't do it.
But it has been, I mean, if it's 70% now, that would be an improvement.
Yeah, okay.
I agree with Hallie's point. I think that saying the students harass your professors, I mean, if the emails from the bookstore didn't harass you into submitting your book list, emails from students from next semester are probably
there's
not
a conflict
going to,
of interest there.
Probably not going to do it for you either.
Hey, faculty boss, get with it.
I was who hadn't submitted. Actually, that's a good idea.
Emails.
I like that. I was going to say, you know, take off a 10% of their merit grades if they're not in on time, but
I don't get a merit grade.
So other things that
it could be perhaps. So I'm not sure what percent of the margin the prices have to go up because faculty don't submit their book lists. But perhaps faculty that submit the book list before a certain date, the cost of the textbook could come down some.
It actually does. We generally do.
Okay. Look, as the University Assembly, it seems to me we can send a message to the Senate that this is a problem of the community, and we think the Senate should do something about it and send that to the faculty.
And certainly willing to do or be a participant in that. I think what we're learning is that it's done, and it has, maybe has had a small increase that's not sustaining. So, in other words, what are the barriers to the list getting that 30%? I mean, I'm sure not all of it is sick, lame, and lazy. But yes. What is?
I do want to clarify on that. So it's not always people think, all right, no, I don't want to tell you. It's some people, like sometimes they're having this, you know, they're just starting a new class or either that or they're trying to look for a new book or, you know, I think they mentioned even to me like lobbyists, is that true? In terms of like book lobbyists, they come in and they give you free samples of the books and take you off. Is that true?
Well, they're doing free books. I don't know about free stuff for dinner.
So I guess it's not, it's definitely hard to make an accurate decision, and I certainly don't want to step on people's toes. So I was mostly thinking of more informal mechanisms of bringing about that change. But, you know, if you guys feel that a more formalized approach would work, you know, I would certainly be open to that.
It doesn't seem like an informal, just from what I'm hearing right now, that an informal method's going to work. That's what you have right now. I know, like, just talking from personal experience, I've been in classes where 2 weeks of the class has gone by before we've been given a book list. And obviously there's some classes that don't have book lists at all. It's all done electronically. So clearly there needs to be some sort of, you know, mechanism that puts the professor's feet to the fire and just says, like, you do this or something's going to happen. Because, you know, I don't see any other way of doing it. Because, you know, as Evan said, you know, you can only send so many emails.
There are some things professors have to do. You have to get your grades. I mean, that works.
I've had professors delay weeks, months on getting grades, and that happens.
That's not that common.
I agree with you.
You're not right.
I think we have to think about what the target should be here. You know, 30% is too high, but 0% I think is unrealistic. There's always going to be a fraction of people who...
And there are problems with getting books and making decisions, but still, it should be higher.
I was actually like, I'm definitely open to that. I was thinking more of like a stepwise approach, like in terms of trying out the publicizing and, you know, publicizing the overall cycle of how these book lists are generated to the students, number one. And then number two, having those book lists shown on, let's say, the Cornell bookstore's website on the homepage, as well as sending a link, as well as sending an email to all the Cornell students saying, hey, these are the tentative book lists, 60% have been, you know, determined or something, and then you have the link and you can find by the course what the books are. So that way students, you're always updating students on
what's available to them. I partly feel that it is a responsibility from both ends. I don't think it's solely the professor's fault. I feel that there's a failure in communication, in communicating what's available and what's sure in terms of the book list, versus, you know, purely these book lists should be done faster than all the professors. If the professors still don't respond, though, like, I guess I would agree with that thing, but I do want a more stepwise approach.
I would recommend we refer this to the Faculty Senate for, because they would know their barriers. They're the ones who can figure out what's a meaningful way to solve this. We can put pressure on it, but we can't make them.
I think the bigger the class, the bigger the problem. In other words, if we have Jim Moss's class or something like that, where there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of books versus smaller class when they're less. When you talk about 30%, I think you got to go with the big problem. If class is over X number first, that would be
important. Okay. I guess we could refer to, I'm open to referring.
I certainly want to hear from the Faculty Senate before I started marching resolutions all over the place that may not really be on point or very may not be helpful, other than to say there's general discontent.
I don't remember I remember exactly after I knew that how fast I acted affected the price of the book. I really acted quickly since I got the first email done. I think that message. Before that, I can't remember if I did it on time or not, because it didn't mean anything.
And I can also tell you now, especially with the student aid piece, that when you get it late, it gets harder and harder to get all those numbers jumbled right and your checks cut for the aid piece that, you know, because you don't have the book, you don't have your book costs in. I mean, there's a whole slew of things that are tied to this that begin to be affected negatively for students. But also, you know, and so there's all kinds of reasons to want to do as good as we can with this. But honestly, it is a faculty issue that we need to keep pressure on. And we've tried the resolutions before, and I don't think they're blown off. But the 30%, they're not reaching 30%. They're getting amens from the 70%.
I think you should draft a letter, send it to Bill Fry, ask him to put before the university faculty committee. And perhaps before the Senate, to get the problem resolved.
So you think that's the Bill Fry?
Yeah.
Who's a member of this body ex officio, by the way? So maybe we should invite him to actually attend.
Yeah. Sorry.
Send a letter to President Orton, saying thank you and saying that we really do recognize the climate has been better.
Yeah.
Since he's been here. And we're thankful for his interest in making that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was very true. He certainly is open.
Well, I've seen him in a number of forms, and he does handle questions.
Yeah, he does. I sent him a letter when I had a problem with Kate. Whether I had a problem with him,
to add to that, I sat next to the Vice President of University Relations at the Trustee Gala on Friday, and he, for about an hour, we talked, and he was echoing the fact that we even had a meeting today with him wouldn't have happened, and he's been here for 40 years, and now he just had been at a meeting with him wouldn't have happened with past meeting. So there definitely is a culture that just needs to be communicated there at any issue.
Yeah, this university, unlike others that I've been worked with, is very college-led and very light university governance in many senses. And I don't see the level. It's not that they're intentionally, as far as I know, not transparent, but the deans don't have as many form. And so I've never seen the arts and sciences dean in person, not once.
You can't see them exactly.
I mean, and some of these people, I mean, like, there's some of these people that you see at the annual employee recognition awards, and that's about the only time they talk to staff.
Oh yeah.
You know, unless you.
I was going to bring that up. I think that I want to bring
that
up.
Yeah, I know.
Can I echo in here, but
the collegiality and the open is not necessarily also echoed in the staff.
Yeah, staff. I mean, the faculty has many forms and things.
Just to let you know.
Ramsey had one other point he wanted to bring up under new business, so if you can.
Yes. So the last thing I wanted to bring up was in terms of the website. I spoke with Ari a couple times last year and a couple, like one or two times this year, and he brought up a couple main points, and specifically in terms of, you know, who would make it, how would it be created, and who would be maintaining the site. So just as a quick recap, this site would serve as a means through which all information related to student governance would be centralized. So you'd have class council, you'd have SA, you'd have UA, and then you'd also have an accountability component to it from the students. And so you'd have the students who have ran and who've gotten elected will have the blurbs of what they chose to run on, and it would show the minutes for what has been done through that with that body for the past years. In terms of how it'd be created, I would create that. I can create that. I have a business and in web design, so I can create that, design it, create it. And in terms of the long run approach, I've been debating that for a long time, whether that be, you know, we have a couple options out there, whether we could appoint someone to a position with that from each respective, you know, student government thing, class council, SA, UA, or whether you could have someone that's appointed to all of it, or I was ultimately thinking of maybe giving it to the Sun. I haven't spoken with the Sun if they would be interested, but that certainly would create... I guess, an independent factor to it and make it more more transparent or, like, less, people would be less suspicious.
I know the SA is working on their own website right now. I know it's up. I don't know how developed it is, if it has everything that they initially planned on having in it. But I'd say definitely talk to, not exactly who is working on it the most.
Probably Mo.
Yeah, probably Rod. And maybe you can combine the two, and there could be two different tabs going on with UA and the SA, and combine that, because I think combining it would be more effective than us having our own and them having their own.
Well, it wouldn't be ours solely. It would just be for the purposes of facilitating information for the student body, so it would incorporate everyone, class councils, SA, and UA.
So I definitely talked to him about working on that.
Okay. Well, I know Ari is very excited about RSSCs and action lists and this sort of thing. If this could serve as perhaps an aggregator of that kind of data in addition to the non-Office of Assembly stuff, with, like, class councils, Pan-Hellenic Council, IFC, that are run separately, that it could be a sort of handy touchstone. I know on the GPSA side, we maintain our own website separately, just like the SA does. We found that it's not a great way to get information out. We archive information permanently, resolutions, governing documents. That's done on the Office of Assembly site. When we want to do something like publicize an event, we use Facebook and we use email, because a blog doesn't do it. People do not visit blogs regularly. They don't check for updates. You know, that sort of thing. Of course, on the GPSA side, just to give you a different perspective, we don't campaign for our positions in the same way. We don't have election portfolios. We don't post things on websites, and we're not elected by the entire graduate professional student body. We can barely fill the 19 seats as it is. So, you know, that not all bodies are like the SA or like class councils. They don't all have big campaigns in that way. So I suppose you could kick me out if you want it, because I'm not doing what I was elected to do as GPSA president, but then someone else would have to spend 10 hours a week.
Yeah, after that, no, I'm on the class count side, it's the same thing. Yeah, we're using Facebook, we're not using our website at all.
I almost wonder about the idea of having I don't know if this would work, but like a committee of people from each of the assemblies, slash, you even mentioned Panhal and ISC, having a person from all that to work on some central website for everything, but
In since we're after hours, can I recommend that those interested get together after the meeting and
in
forge ahead and let us know what you think is in best interest? And
motion to adjourn.
Meeting adjourned at
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.